This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined, as always, by Bradley Chambers. Tonight, we've got two sponsors for the show. The first is Silent Light, which is an app that helps you manage the noise levels in your classroom. And the second is Jamf Software, makers of the Casper Suite. And we'll tell you more about both of those as the show goes on. And actually, tonight, we'll talk quite a lot about the Casper Suite, because the theme of tonight is basically the story of our new deployment at Cedars. So good evening, Bradley. How are you?
Ah, happy anniversary, Fraser.
Yes, indeed. This is, in fact, the 1 year anniversary of the show. Who would have thought we got this far?
I didn't get you a present. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I didn't get you anything either.
So we're even. What's funny is I didn't get my wife a push present yet. You know, that's like, I don't know if that's like the thing over in Scotland, but it's like a tradition here that you get your wife a push present for.
Is it really called that?
Yeah, I promise you it's really called that. But the kid was 3 weeks early, and then our lives have been just crazy since then. And I even told her, I was like, I'm going to buy you something. Just, you know, my life is working and then going home. It's funny, I was talking to a coworker tonight, and she's talking about, like, she didn't have kids. And I said, you know, the difference is, like, when I didn't have kids, Saturdays mowing the grass was my chore. And now Saturdays mowing the grass is my break. That's the difference. So, doing well. School has started. We are finishing up day two, and I had lunch with my headmaster today. It's funny. I actually bribed him with lunch to get out of actually putting all of our student directory into our handbook, because it's a real big pain. Due to RenWeb, actually, because the way they export data. Because parents have access to all that on their the iPhone and Android apps, like the phone, you know, student addresses, teacher information, all that's digital now. And so I said, hey, if I buy you lunch at a really good burger place, will you not do that? And he said, okay. it's like a $10 burger place, which is like, you know, like that's like a lot of money in pounds. No, that's actually not a lot of money then, $10. No, I don't know. Never know what the conversions. We were talking at lunch and said it's been really quiet. It's like it didn't feel like a first day of school, which is good. You know, usually there's just general craziness and things of that nature. But it was really smooth. Now, we didn't make any big operational changes this year like we had in years past. Like last year, we kind of overhauled our lunch program. This year, it was kind of just, you know, just kind of more of the same. So all of our new devices are working well. And had a couple iPads that we have a thing called Star Reader, which I'm not sure what it does, but we have a school-wide service called Star Reader. I have no idea. But I did not get the URL plugged into a couple of the iPads for it to connect to our server. So
there's always something, isn't there?
Yeah, other than that, good to go. Good to go. Infrastructure's hanging on. One of the things my next big challenge is we're running out of DHCP leases. We do our DHCP on our firewall, and it has a limit of like 1,000 devices. And so, 1,000 addresses, and between our guest network and the church staff and their family life center, we get to 500-600 devices on a given day. So we slowly inch towards that 1,000 limit. Mm-hmm. So gotta fix that
that's,
one day.
That's almost not enough headroom there.
No.
Yeah, that'll make you nervous for a while.
It's really bad on Sundays. Like, we have a lot of guests on the network Sundays, and we have the issue of especially at that family life center, they have events and they, you know, use guest Wi-Fi for the events, and they pay for that technically built in, but our network just isn't built from a wireless design with the number of APs and where we have them placed, and just our back-end switching in LAN is not designed to be a conference center. And there's a big difference between building your network to be a school and then building it to be a conference center. I mean, again,
yes,
we have the $5,000 firewall, not the $15,000 or $20,000 firewall.
Yeah,
you know, that you can handle that kind of throughput that you need. I mean, we had an event the other day that was oddly enough the public school like teacher orientation, and they had new teacher or something with 800 teachers on campus, and they all brought wireless devices. Well, they're just not like the place where they were at just didn't have the wireless density to cover to handle that. And they were texting me, it's like, hey, what's going on with the wireless? And I checked, it's like the APs are just like, I mean, it's not really a vendor you choose. It's just like, there just wasn't enough radio coverage in there because it wasn't designed for that.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like, if you bought anything and put it out in that configuration, it wouldn't work.
Right. You know, you have to, I say, like, if we're going to have this kind of environment, we have to plan for that. Like, so I said, you know, what you guys need to decide from an operational standpoint is what's my expectations of number of users in this building. Then I have to work backwards from that, because we can't just say like, well, just let's just have wireless in this building. You have to say like, okay, we need to be able to support 1,000 people on wireless in this building. It's like, okay, well then we have to build for that. And because we didn't build for that, we built for like a coffee shop style environment and, you know, casual usage, not like a conference center.
Yeah, because then you're also thinking about things like, you know, the rate of roaming, for example, mm-hmm. and the turnover of devices and various things like that. You know, there are factors in a conference situation. You know, the whole place might move around within 1 hour, whereas in a school, you know, for the most part, at least half your devices, at least in our school, half of our devices are pretty much in the same room all day. You know, they're not moving between APs in the same way.
Well, and then even going past that number of clients, it's like, what do you expect those clients to do? Is it just, mm-hmm. I mean, what kind of activity do we expect? Do they all need to be able to stream video at the same time? Because that gets to be a real challenge when you start talking about people have iPhones and iPads, and you know, the only iPhone that's 5 gigahertz is the 5. And so, you know, when you're talking about density like that, you've got a channel issue on 2.4 because there's only 3 non-overlapping channels. So the APs, if you get them too close together, you have what's called co-channel interference, where you have like 2 APs on channel 1 and they're just fighting each other. So that what you have to do is you have to shrink the power cell of the AP where it doesn't broadcast. I mean, the natural thing we do with Wi-Fi by, you know, our thoughts is, well, make it strong, as powerful as possible. But it's actually the inverse, is you kind of want to shrink the power cell, especially on 2.4, to where other, you know, APs in some ways barely see each other. Like, you really only want to see a couple of APs on 2.4. Otherwise, you have that channel interference. And so, like, you know, you have to really design that. Again, I mean, designing for a school, you know, where you say, okay, we got, you know, we're going to have an AP in this classroom, we're going to have this many clients, we got concrete walls, so it's really going to deaden the signal. You know, it's just a different environment.
Yeah, we saw some of that. I was doing a wee bit of work on that this morning, actually. Our math teacher was in, and his classroom is above the science lab, and they share an access point because they're both quite small classrooms. And he was complaining that he couldn't get on the Wi-Fi there. But what had happened was that some building nearby had brought up another public access Wi-Fi hotspot. So it was called something like BT Wi-Fi or something. And he had previously connected to BT Wi-Fi, say, in an airport or something. And his laptop was seeing that as a stronger signal than our access point because it was in a different room. And was preferring to connect, to try and connect to some other access point outside. So I had to kind of go in and sort his network ordering out a little bit. But it's things like that, you know, we come back to school and somebody else has put up another access point or something. So our 2.4 channel is looking really messy now all over the school. So it's good to be moving on to newer devices.
Well, yeah, because your iPhone, certainly your new iPads are certainly 5 gigahertz. And I'm really almost to the point where if you look at your corporately owned devices and they're all 5 gigahertz and you know you've got ample AP coverage, it's like, let's just turn off this 2.4 radio. Like, why even? Let's just not even have it. Of course, on 802.11ac, there is no 2.4. It is 5 gigahertz only because you've got, like, depending on what country you're in, you've got, I think, anywhere from 19 to 23 non-overlapping channels in 5 gigahertz. And the cell is smaller. You know, 5 gigahertz doesn't, you know, is it more attenuated by walls and things like that? And so it's like almost to the point where it's like, well, let's just, like, forget 2.4. Let's just go, if we've got enough density, let's just go to 5 gigahertz only. Yeah, obviously, in high density situations, you like to make use of both bands. But if you've got the coverage, it's like, let's just forget 2.4. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe
so it's
maybe
all about the local situation, isn't it?
You know, yeah. Well, wireless is, it's all, you know, the answer to everything about wireless is it depends.
And that's engineering for you.
Yeah. Well, you know, because every environment's different. Your walls are different. I mean, because we're in our school is inside of a neighborhood, so I have to deal with, you know, people's like routers outside my school that bleed over.
Yeah, we're starting to see much more of that as well.
Yeah, first world problems, I guess.
Yes, very much so. So our topic for tonight, Bradley, is the issue that has been filling my entire week, which is the delivery and cataloging and unpacking and everything of our new iPads, which you kind of feel like I've been talking about it forever, and it's finally here and it's finally actually done as well, which is an interesting topic in itself as to how we sort of got done so quickly. But I thought we would just kind of talk through it sort of step by step and go through the process that I went through the things that I decided to do, the things that I decided to sort of skip, and how things are different now from what they were 3 years ago when we did our first ever iPad deployment.
Do you ever feel like, you know, I think Sean Blanc's been talking a lot about like kind of like feeling like a fraud a lot about, you know, you're doing projects and taking on new things. And I always feel like when I'm doing projects internally that we talk about forever, you know, as you're planning them, I always feel like people are wondering, like, does he know what he's doing? Like, does he actually know? You know, maybe your teachers, I'm, you know, more guessing. It's like maybe they think, well, Frazier like fell his way through this last time. Does he really know what he's doing? You know, can he pull this off again? And I feel that way a lot. Like, you just wonder, like, do my employees think I'm just Googling stuff day to day? Which most of the time I am.
Well, that's the fact that we know to Google it is actually what makes us special. It's what we do for other people.
Yes.
And the secret of systems administration is you copy and paste the error message into Google and then you follow whatever comes up. Usually from Stack Overflow or SuperUser or something. My problem is more that our staff sort of think that I can basically make anything happen with zero effort. Yeah, it's like, oh, Fraser just knocked that off in his lunch hour or whatever, you know. But in fact, what they don't see is the kind of swan-like gliding on the surface and then furious paddling underneath to make it all happen. But I guess I'll keep that illusion going as long as I can.
Yeah, it's funny. I got a buddy that he's actually an engineer, oddly enough, but he's like everybody's, all of his friends, like in family tech support. And he kind of gets tired of people asking him questions that you could literally Google. And so what he does now is he like he Googles it on his phone and sends them a screenshot of the Google results. Like, just to be a jerk. And it's kind of like, you know, it's a good point. Good point. Touche.
Yeah, it's a little passive aggressive for my taste.
Well, and you probably shouldn't do that to people that you work with and are paid to support.
Yeah, you gotta help them out.
Yes.
Be good to them. Because they buy your Christmas present for you.
What? Christmas presents? I always joke that I don't get... Yeah, I don't joke that I don't get tips at Christmas, and so I'm not going to be as helpful. It's like the postman. You know, didn't tip your postman, so he loses your packages.
Yeah, your secret Santa is like a voodoo doll or something of you.
So how... you know, you mentioned you had a reseller. Like, did they deliver them themselves, or did like they just ship them to, like in UPS or whoever the shipping services delivered these?
Yeah, we the reseller's actually in town here in Greenock. It's a company called Misco. They've really been great to work with, but they have a big warehouse just along the road where they keep a lot of stuff, and this kind of their mail order center as well. They have a big mail order business, and they actually just used their own van to bring it from the stock to the school. So that was helpful. I think I mentioned last week that they dropped us off black ones instead of white ones, which was actually kind of my fault because I gave them the wrong PO. So they fixed that the next day for us really quick, which was fantastic. And so we're recording on Thursday night, and Tuesday morning was when our correctly coloured iPads arrived. And that was 11 o'clock in the morning. I had four other folks working with me. So by the end of that day, we more or less had all the devices unpacked and in their cases, which was surprising to me. I thought that was going to take us longer, but we got that all done within one day. So there's various steps to go through with that, I guess. And whenever you're taking delivery, you've always got to sort of check that what you're getting is what you thought you were getting, and we obviously caught that with the color of the devices. But more than that, I guess the next step is always sort of checking for damage, right? So check the shipping cartons. Are any of them punctured or crumpled or anything like that? Because those are the ones you're going to want to look at. Now, Apple's shipping cartons are pretty robust. It's a heavy, heavy cardboard box with spacers inside, and then there's another cardboard carton inside, and then inside that is five iPads in retail boxes, and they're obviously in sort of polystyrene frames inside that as well. So we didn't have any problems with, you know, boxes having been dropped or crushed or anything like that, because they'd been taken quite good care of from the warehouse. And then just fixing the error was just to phone them up and let them know that we'd got the wrong ones, and then they fixed that for us the next day. So that was the taking delivery part. I think, you know, the more you scale this up, the more actual help you want to do or you want to get to try and do that, because you know, we were taking in 110 and it took us, that was 22 boxes worth of iPads, you know, and if you're taking in, you know, 500 or 800 or something, it's you're going to want to find a space to put them as well. You know, we were using one whole classroom just to do this job. So it's kind of a messy business, because then once you get through that part, you've got to unpack them. And I just mentioned how much kind of material there is. But what we did was we took each box and we labeled the box with a letter. So letter A through to V, I think it would be. So each box has, in fact, a sticker on the outside that has the serial number of all the devices inside the box. And my aim for the sort of first day of our operation was to try and go from 22 cardboard boxes to 110 iPads in their cases with an identifying barcode sticker on that case. So the way we did this was kind of... my concern was not to kind of lose track of everything. So what we did was we went a box at a time. We'd take one box and five cases and open the box, split out the internal carton, and then unpack each of the five iPads, put them in their cases, and then from inside the box we would strip out the lightning cable and the charger, unwrap the charger, and we just took one big box and filled that with all the cables, and then filled another box with all the chargers. So we didn't really have any concern about keeping the same charger with the same cable or anything like that. And then we'd put the iPad in the case, and then we would stack the bottom part of the iPad box with the iPad on top and discard the top part of the retail box as well. And then we put those two things back inside the outer shipping box that had the serial numbers on it. So at the end of the day, you've got box A with five lower parts of the retail box plus an iPad in its case on top. And that was how we kept it together with the serial number. The reason for keeping the lower part of the box there was just to because the lower part of the box is the back of the box when it's closed, which has the serial number on it. So that was the way I was going to verify that which one of the five iPads I was looking at when I took it out of the box. With me so far? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the big difference. If you're, if you're in the States and you've done an iPad deployment, it's just amazing how drastically different that shipping process is. All of my chargers are like coming out, they just ship them five to a box. And, you just wonder, you almost wish that you could get some sort of, do you guys have the Amazon frustration free packaging in Scotland?
Yep, we have that.
You wish you could get that with Apple. It's you almost wish you could say, ship 105 chargers and lightning cables in one big barrel.
Yeah.
So you could, because all those little things, like you said, especially as you go, again, maybe a 500, maybe a 1,000, all those things add up in time. And if you could say, all right, we're literally going to let kids pick up a charger and a cable when we give them their iPad, just send them in one big box, or, ship them, 25 to a box, just loose and free, maybe within the little plastic thing to keep the cable together. And, those little things add up.
I reckon it probably took us about... in total, if you sort of divide it out, about 10 minutes per iPad to get it out of the box, put it in its case, split out the charger and cable, and also unwrap the charger, because the charger's got a little plastic film on it as well, and then put the plug head together with the charger as well. So that was about 10 minutes per iPad just to do that part.
So you are all lightning now.
We're all lightning now, and actually that's, that's not nothing. I mean, I think... a lot of people have criticized Apple for changing the connector, but, once in 10 years, big deal. But I certainly was pretty impressed with that, and it's so much more robust. And it was a time saver as well, because it's reversible. You never have to try and orient the connector in your hand before you plug it in. So you could just, we'll talk later about how we sync them, but, when you've got a bunch of seven cables in your hand, you can just go bang, 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 and stick them into seven iPads, and you're done. It's... super robust.
Yeah, I've experienced that as well. It's so much easier, and you don't feel like you're going to break something. You don't feel like you're breaking the pins off.
Yeah. It doesn't feel fragile at all, and that's great.
One of the things that got me thinking about is how much slower the Retina iPads charge than the non-Retina. Mm. And so, I wonder if that'll ever... Again, that'll be a topic for, I guess, November, but I wonder how if that'll... if a kid comes in and it's... 10% still dead if it takes them longer to get back to get back up.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I did notice when we were unpacking was that the fourth generation Retina iPads are shipping with a 12 watt charger now, and the previous ones we had were 10 watt chargers. So that was another job we had to do, was to keep our existing chargers separate from the new chargers because of the confusion there. You know, why is my iPad charging slowly? Because, well, somehow you've got an old charger. So we kept them all separate as well. The next step we did was I used an app called Code128 Encoder, which is just an app that lets you import lists of text or numbers, and it will generate PNG files of barcodes. So I used that to generate a folder full of barcodes, one for each iPad, and tried to kind of group them into box letters. So I would do box A, box B, box C, and then printed them out five to a sheet. And then we could put each sheet in the box. So we had now a box with a letter on it, five iPads stacked with their lower half of the retail case, and a sheet of five barcodes in there. So the next job was for each person to take the box again, cut up the barcodes, and then what they would do is they would hand to me. I sat there with just a roll of tape and a desk, and they would bring to me five iPads with the lower half of the case, the iPad in its own iPad case, and the printed barcode. And what I would do is I would verify against the box that the barcode they had cut out for me and given me was the same as the one in the box that came with that iPad. And then once I'd verified that, I could discard the bottom half of the retail box, stick the barcode into the case, and then that iPad was basically secure. And by secure, I mean we knew which device it was. It was identifiable from the case, and we could just put it in a stack now, and we could get rid of the retail box. So that was the way that we did that. And actually, just a kind of side note, what I used for that tape was not just normal sort of Scotch tape, but I got bookbinding tape, which has a couple of interesting properties, apart from being fantastically more expensive than normal Scotch tape, is it's very optically clear. So it's very clear to see through, which means that you can scan a barcode through it very easily without errors. But it's also much stickier than normal sellotape as well. So we put that on the inside of the case in an area that was not likely to be to receive a lot of friction or damage. So that should stick there pretty robustly as long as the case is in use. So that was kind of the barcoding process. And Code128 Encoder is an okay app. It's like $2 in the Mac App Store. But it didn't have that many automation features. I mean, basically you could import a text file of data one per line and it would generate a barcode for each of them. But I couldn't say, you know, generate them in groups of five or whatever, or sort them this way or that way. So it would have been nice to have a slightly more powerful barcode generation tool for that. And there are plenty, of course, you can use a barcode font or something as well. But that's the one we chose, and it worked okay for us.
If we have new listeners, I guess, run through what devices you guys actually purchased.
Mm-hmm. We purchased 110 fourth generation 32 gig Wi-Fi iPads.
White.
White as well, yes.
Not crazy, I mean black. I mean, who bought black?
No, absolutely not. And yeah, I mean, there's a couple of reasons for doing that as well. I was speaking on Twitter earlier on today just saying that these are really fast iPads. I mean, I know we're coming from first generation iPads, but I've had a third generation Retina iPad since it shipped. And even for me, though, these new ones are a big step up from that. So that was a big factor in our decision to go with that over, say, iPad Mini. Form factor aside, the fact that this one is, you know, twice as fast again as the iPad Mini is a really big deal. So I'm really looking forward to having them in class.
Before we move on, let's take a moment to thank our first sponsor for this week. It's Silent Light for iOS. They've been with us for a few weeks now, and it's a pretty cool app. And basically, the premise of it is it's your silent ally in the classroom. So it's there and to help you manage your classroom noise levels. So you set your noise level target on the device, and the students kind of get feedback as they go along, and they're rewarded with points. So the teacher doesn't have to spend his or her time, you know, shushing, which I've mentioned before. I'm doing a lot of that with my newborn son. So it's a really, really easy app to use. It's, again, called Silent Light for iPad and iPhone. And I believe last time I checked, it was $3.99 on the App Store. But again, really, really easy app to use. It's kind of your helping hand in the classroom. Glenn Story's a listener of the show, and I follow him on Twitter. He's a good guy. And so definitely want to check out the app. It's on the App Store. Again, Silent Light. And you can find out more at topstoryapps.com. TopStoryApps.com. We'll have a link for them in the show notes. Again, thanks for Silent Light for sponsoring the show this week. Great company name, by the way, Top Story Apps. It's neat because it's his last name. I always thought that was neat.
Fantastic. Yep. So, next step on this whole procedure is that I wanted to check that we didn't have any dead on arrival iPads. Now, I wasn't expecting very many. iPad reliability is something that's been pretty good over the years, but you know, it's mass manufacture and they've been shipped all the way from China, so there's a possibility that something has gone wrong with one of them. So what we did here, and this is perhaps maybe more time consuming than you might want it to be, but I thought it was worthwhile doing, was I used Apple Configurator and I just activated one iPad and made a kind of master backup from the iPad, and I didn't do any, no apps going on, no profiles, except a profile to bring it up on our Wi-Fi network, so we could test that the Wi-Fi worked as well. We just blasted through, you know, all 110 iPads, activated them all, and then we all sat down, took a pile of iPads, and we just went through a quick check procedure where we looked at things like do all the switches and buttons work? Home button, the sleep-wake button, volume button, the side switch, and that's all the buttons there are on the iPad. We tested all of those, but crucially also tested both the cameras. So we opened up the camera application, switched to the front camera, switched to the back camera. Are they all working? And that was the extent of the check, and just a sort of visual check that had been put together correctly. And we did actually find one iPad where the back camera didn't work. Basically, what you would see is when you open the camera application in iOS, you see the kind of animation of the shutter opening.
Yeah.
Well, this iPad, you would see the picture of the shutter, but it would never open, right? Which is indicative of there being something wrong with the camera at the back. So that iPad had to go to one side. It's getting returned for another one. And we also found, bizarrely, that one of our iPad cases lacked a cutout hole for the camera on the back. Yeah, it just missed its cut or whatever. And it didn't have a hole for the camera, which is...
Those two seem like they would have gone well. That would have been a perfect case for that iPad.
Yeah, we could just put the two together and that would have been no problem. That could be the naughty child's...
no camera for you.
It's like the poor man's camera profile, yeah.
When you're talking about bringing up on your Wi-Fi network, did you put it on like your staff network or you know, obviously, you know, you got a password on your staff network or your main network, but did you do that and go through that process of actually typing in the passcode, or did you use a profile for that?
Well, what we actually did was I deployed another SSID on our network. So I just brought up another SSID, which had no authentication. And I just put in a profile because we were using Configurator to activate the iPads, I just said, add in this iPad activation Wi-Fi profile, and that would bring them up on the network. But no password or anything like that. I mean, I could have done a password, it wouldn't have been any more difficult, but just for the sake of simplicity, I made this network that was basically open. But just to, for kind of, in case I forgot, I suppose, what I also did was, this is quite a cool AirHi feature, is you can time your SSIDs so that they come on and off at different times of the day. So what I did was I said, this SSID is only available between 9 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. So right now, it's 9 o'clock at night here. That SSID is not available at the school, and it won't be available until I go back in the morning. So that's what I did for that, and then that'll stop working pretty much next Monday. I think it's set to stop working for good.
Yeah, we use that feature as well. That's nice. We have a network on Sunday that like some of our like Sunday school teachers use, and it's kind of like fewer, it's meant to like be easy to sign on. There's no authentication, just blocks internal access to like internal resources, but it's meant to be very easy. It's only available for 3 hours on Sundays. It's really, really simple.
Yeah, it's a cool feature. And we're also using that this year for our guest network and the student network as well. So the guest network's only there from 9 till 3, and the student network's there from 8 till 4:30, I think, is the latest time students should be in school, and obviously Monday to Friday as well. So only our staff network is available 24/7 for this year. So we did that as well. That was part of it. So we tested the Wi-Fi as well, and that was all working fine. So we've got one iPad. At this point, we've got one iPad that needs to be replaced, and the rest are tested to be working fine. So what's the next step? Well, the next step is to try and kind of get these things into some kind of semblance of class groups or sets or whatever however you're going to deploy them. And the hardest part of this is always the fact that you never really know who's coming back to school until they come back to school. You know, so the, you know, for the last couple of weeks of school holidays, you always get people phoning up going, have you got a place for this child? This kid's not coming back. This person you thought wasn't coming back, in fact, now is coming back, and so on and so on. So the numbers of iPads in each class just kind of kept going up and down all throughout the week. But there's a kind of core number. So we set it up for a certain number, and we just grouped them on a big long bench, 10 for this class, 15 for this class, whatever. And at that point, it was time to start getting into apps. And this was my first experience of buying apps through volume purchase and using the VPP website and Apple Configurator to sort of go through this whole process. So got our credit card, put it into the volume purchase program, started buying apps. And as you know, Bradley, the sort of weird thing about volume purchase is that Every title you want to buy is an individual transaction in the store. And because our deployment model is both institutional and personal, for apps that were going to be deployed to the whole school, we needed to basically buy half of them in one transaction and half of them in another transaction, because half of those codes are going to Casper and half of those codes are going to Apple Configurator. So the net result of this is that this just looks like rampant fraud on a credit card. So within about 25 minutes of starting this process, the credit card got blocked.
Wait a minute. You guys actually are... See, I don't even think we have the option to use a credit card in the volume purchase program.
Well, we don't have the option not to use a credit card. This is the even sort of lamer thing about volume purchases outside the US is that... And you guys have volume purchase vouchers that you can buy in big quantities. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, and they come in... what's funny is they're not digital downloads. Like, you have to get them in the mail. I guess like an animal. They literally come in a FedEx envelope. And I think you can get them like in as few as $100. But like, they have them. You can buy, I think as max is maybe 1,000 or maybe even 10,000. But like, I have, I don't know, like $1,000 right now on our account. And so you just go in there and just buy it, and it's just sitting there. You just redeem them like it's an App Store gift card. I could see where your credit card company would shut that down.
Yeah, because it looks exactly, because it's, at this point, I've probably made something like 70 to 80 different transactions through the iTunes volume purchase system, each of which is for like minimum £20, So what they see is, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 transactions, all from the same site, all for sort of moderate amounts of money. Which adding up to quite serious amounts of money, and that's, even as I say it, that sounds like a red flag, and that's how it was. But we made a phone call to them, we explained what was going on, and since then there's been no problem with the car. They've kind of toned down the warnings on that. So got through all our apps. I mean, the thing that I sort of hadn't realized, and previously, before school finished, we went through a whole process of, well, what apps do you want for next year? Building up a big spreadsheet of which class wants which apps, for which levels, and so on. And then I sort of sat down to start this process, and I realized, oh, that's a lot of apps, and it's a lot of transactions. So it took me a fair long time. I mean, I kind of sort of wish that I had started this process like 3 weeks before. But, you kind of eventually get into a groove of click this, do this, click this, do that, and you're sort of, being a human robot to get through all of this. And so far, with a sort of 1.5 evening's work of doing it, I've got all the codes in place for all of the primary school, all of the Apple configurator stuff. Obviously, the stuff that's going out through the MDM server can actually wait for a while because I don't need those codes to be in place until the school opens. So that can wait for a little while. But it's a kind of multi-step process, you know.
Speaking of MDM, let's take a minute and thank our next sponsor, Jamf Software, who we, I guess we'll be talking about here in the coming minutes. Jamf Software provides ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in educational organizations. Now with Casper Focus, they've placed these powerful technologies into the hand, directly into the hands of the teachers that work with the students every day. Casper Focus enables teachers to unlock the full potential of the iPad in the classroom by ensuring all students are engaged on the same activity and on the same activity on the, using their iOS device in the way that technology was intended. Learn more at jampsoftware.com. That's JAMFsoftware.com. And if you follow them on Twitter, which I always love it when companies actually like use their Twitter account for like kind of like useful things, and it's not just a just like a PR engine. And Jamp's pretty good on Twitter, and I followed them, and they started talking about version 9 that's coming out. That looks to be very interesting. So if you want to read out more, go check out their Twitter page. It's at Jamp Software.
Yeah, we're running 8.7 at the moment. Just had that installed a couple of weeks ago. One of the big things about version 9, I think, is when you sent me that link and then I followed up on it a little bit, was they've now got a kind of responsive web UI for different size devices. So at the moment with 8.7, if you go onto your GSS using an iPhone, you're just seeing the tiny little version of the full-size desktop interface. But I believe in Casper 9, there's a much more kind of responsive UI that will let you do a lot more from a phone with a kind of phone-sized and phone-optimized interface as well. So looking forward to that.
That's handy. Like if you were, you know, walking down the hallway and a teacher, you know, say, hey, I need you to do this in Casper. So you can just pull out your phone, probably have a home screen icon, log in, and you're good to go. So
yeah.
It looks like a neat upgrade. You always wish those upgrades would come. I know it's hard to develop in timelines. Of course, we're going to be dealing with that with iOS 7. But it's one of those, like, you when that releases, you desperately want to install it. But it's like, well, let's just get rolling with school. Maybe we'll have a break, Thanksgiving break or something. They haven't even announced the release date. But, you know, the geek in me always wants to install that stuff, like, day one. But, you know, as a good sysadmin, it's like, let's just wait. Let's see what the bugs are. Let's see if there's any issues. And then we'll deploy it at a good moment.
Yeah, I think what I'm probably going to do with that is I'll install it on a separate Amazon EC2 server, play with it there, and then figure out how to migrate my other one across. In fact, it should in principle be possible. I could snapshot my existing one, bring up a new virtual machine based on the old one, practice the migration on that one, and then actually do it for real on my last one. That's the beauty of virtualization, I suppose, isn't it?
Seems like a good blog post.
Yeah. Could be a month's worth of posts, I think. Trying to work that out. So Casper's kind of been a part of it. We haven't done too much with the Casper stuff yet, except at the point of setup. So in this kind of story, the point we're at now is basically we have got iPads unpacked, physically checked. We know the ones that are working. We know the ones that need to be returned. And they've all got a barcode on the case. They're in class groups. Now, the next thing is activation through Apple Configurator. So we're doing this differently for both primary and secondary. The primary pupils, the younger pupils, are getting what Apple calls an institutional model deployment. So basically, I install all the apps through Apple Configurator. They don't have access to the App Store. And if they want new apps or they want updates, it comes back to base and we update it that way. The older kids are getting what Apple calls a personal model deployment, where they basically run the iPad on their own Apple ID, and then we will push them apps to their devices, and we're doing it through Casper. So we'll come back to that part. But the first solution I had to solve was how to do it for the institutional model for the younger kids. So we've bought the apps, downloaded one copy in iTunes, and then imported that into Apple Configurator. Put our volume purchase codes into Apple Configurator. and it's time to plug in some iPads. But one of the things I did before that was in Casper, you can make custom enrollment profiles that have certain bits of information already filled in. So what I did in Casper lets you make buildings and groups and departments. And when you make an enrollment profile, you can say anything that enrolls with this profile should have its department set to whatever you choose. So what I did was I set up each of our class groupings as a department in the school. And then I made, for each of those classes, I made one enrollment profile for that class. So I've got my primary one enrollment profile, my primary two enrollment profile, and so on. Download them all, put them all into Apple Configurator. And then for each class group, I'm putting on basically a what we call a base profile, which is essentially just our security settings, App Store restriction, movies and TV shows restriction, and dirty books from the iBookstore restriction. And then the other one that you have to do at this point is you have to, if you want to turn off the App Store but still be able to install apps through Configurator, that restriction has to be put on by Configurator so Configurator can take it off before it installs another app. Because what I tested and discovered today was that if I turn off the App Store through Casper, then Apple Configurator doesn't know how to override that. So you have to put that App Store restriction on through Configurator and not through Casper. So that was a bit of learning from today. So we went through and we took every class batch, set up the profiles that we wanted installed, and then the apps that we wanted installed, and hit go. And, you know, for those iPads, it was probably about, it was taking between 15 and 20 minutes per device, per batch rather, because it does them concurrently. But what we found was that when it came to the end, what would happen is that Configurator tries to install, redeem the codes for the apps and then install the apps and then apply the profiles and then it's done. And what we found was that if any part of that fails, the whole thing kind of fails and you have to start over from scratch. And the thing that made it fail for us a couple of times was that in order to do the enrollment profile where your device will enroll in your NDM server, the device has to be up and have an active network connection before you do that. So we were trying to install all the profiles in one go and then be done with it. But the problem was that when the Wi-Fi profile goes on, it's set to auto-join the network, but it couldn't auto-join the network fast enough that it had a working network connection before the NDM profile tried to connect to Casper and failed, and therefore failed the whole install. So eventually what we did was we said, okay, we'll put on the Wi-Fi profile and the base security profile, and we'll leave the enrollment profile for now. So we do that, install the apps, install the profiles, and then once the devices were fully supervised and set up, I would then tick the box to turn on the enrollment profile and refresh the whole set once more. That's obviously very quick because all you're doing is adding one profile. And then at that point, you know, 5 minutes after you've configured them, they've all got an IP address, they can all connect to the MDM server, and that's the way that works smoothly. But trying to do it all in one go, there's a sort of race condition between, is the network up, has Apple Configurator tried to enroll a device, and whichever one, if the network's not up by the time the enrollment is tried, the whole thing will fail. So that's a little tip, is to don't try and do an MDM enrollment as you're supervising the device, do it afterwards.
What kind of machine are you using to run your Configurator install?
We are using a 2010 Mac Pro, which used to be our file server and is now our Apple Configurator machine. It's been fine. We're using that plus two 7-port Belkin hubs that allow us to connect. We can connect 14 and then plug two more into the front panel of the Mac Pro, so we can do 16 at one time, which is as big as any of our class groups are. So that was nice and easy.
What OS came on these? Was it fully up to date with, 6.1.3?
6.1.3. Yeah, they were all bang up to date, which was great.
Yeah, because that would add a lot of time.
Yeah, it did. I mean, what happened was if any of those supervision processes failed, you had to sort of unsupervise the device and then supervise it again. And at that point, Configurator does actually reinstall iOS. So we had a couple of slow points where, you know, a big batch of 14 failed because of the enrollment race condition. And then we had to kind of say, okay, start over again. And then it would install 6.1.3 on 14 iPads and then do the whole process over again. But you know, once we figured out why that was happening, it wasn't too big of a problem to just do that wee extra step, and we were done. So at that point, we've now got all of our iPads configured, activated, enrolled in Casper, and basically ready to go. For the whole secondary department, because they're doing a personal model deployment, we're not restoring any backup to those devices, neither are we installing any apps to them at all. So configuring all of the secondary ones was as quick as lightning, because you just plug them in, say, install the base profile, and then configure them, supervise them, and then go. And that took, you know, 20 seconds per iPad, and then we just added the MDM enrollment profile, refreshed them once again, and that was that whole set ready for opening day. So that the personal model is really, really fast. That's part of the beauty of it, is you don't have to wait for GarageBand and iMovie and all these apps to be pushed over USB to these iPads. You can just have that in your MDM, and once the pupil enrolls, sets it up, you can start pushing apps out to them, or they can go into Casper self-service and get them separately, and you don't have to do anything with it. It's really, really fast and much less effort.
Well, and again, as you have a decent size deployment, anything you can do to ease your setup is worth it, because you don't want to be doing something 100 times. You want to try to automate as much as you can.
Yeah. Or if you can't automate it, distribute it. So, you know, with the personal model, I'm basically making it the responsibility of the students themselves to set up their apps, right? That was one of the reasons why I actually chose the Casper suite, was because it had this idea of self-service where the students could go into what is basically a web clip on the screen and say, there's a bunch of apps that are available to me. And because they're enrolled in groups, or departments, this is really important, I can say when I put an app into Casper, I say this app is only available to certain groups. So not everybody will see the same thing in that self-service portal when they go into it. Depending on their iPad, they might see, some higher computing materials if they're taking that class, or they might see art materials if they're taking art or whatever. So that's another little challenge I have to solve for secondary, is which pupils are in which classes and taking which subjects, so they get the right apps as well. But the beauty of that is that can all be done without touching an iPad, right? All those iPads are in a crate now. I'm not going to touch them again till opening day. And all I do is sit and twiddle around in Casper. And then when they all enroll, they will see the right apps and we can go from there, which is really nice. Next thing to think about is some of the other profiles you might want to push. So we have... the way I've done it in Apple Configurator this year is I've only put the absolute minimum set of profiles on through Apple Configurator. And even for the younger kids who are not really doing anything with apps in Casper, I still got them in there so that I can push configuration profiles wirelessly to their devices. So even though they've got a few through Apple Configurator, I'm using Casper for the most part to send them the rest of the settings. So I'm sending them things like web clips, I'm sending them calendar subscriptions, I'm sending them, I could send them other restrictions if I need to. Say I need to turn off the camera, or I need to disable iMessage or FaceTime or something. I do all that through Casper rather than doing it through Configurator, because as always, Configurator is going to be a return to base and plug-in situation, whereas Casper is wireless, and that's really the way you want to go with that. And obviously other MDM servers can do the same thing. So that's pretty much where we are just now with that whole story. All the iPads are sitting in crates waiting to go. The younger ones have got all their apps on them. They've got their basic restrictions on them, and they've got certain profiles pushed out from Casper. The rest of them are sitting there showing the iOS setup assistant. They're showing swipe to set up. They don't have any apps installed, but they are enrolled in the MDM already, so I can see them in Casper. I can put them into groups, and I can start to assign apps to groups or apps to iPads. So it's fun times. You mentioned, obviously, in the sponsor read, the folks at Jamf want us to mention Casper Focus. I haven't done anything with Casper Focus yet, but that's something that I'm going to be looking at a little bit, probably after school starts. It's that's not a fundamental part of the setup. You can do that afterwards if you need to. So we'll maybe roll it out for a couple of classes first and see how it works. I don't know, have you seen Casper Focus, Bradley?
I've seen, I think, a video of it, and it looks really, 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 really neat. And as we mentioned before, it's using that guided access API. And you can do that through Configurator. You can say, lock these iPads to that app. But obviously, that means you have to bring in and, you know, plug them in to a wire and sync them, and or refresh, I guess, is the term, which, you know, is very time-consuming with Casper Focus, obviously. It's just, you know, hit the head of a button on the teacher's iPad.
Yeah, so they're basically pushing that single app mode over MDM to individual devices, and it's a capability that I think is interesting, and I would like to deploy it so that I can get teacher feedback on what it's good for and when it's not good. But it'll be interesting to see how people react to that.
Yeah, like if the students who have basically had iPads, you know, for the past couple of years aren't going to be used to someone else being able to control what they can and cannot do on the fly.
Yeah, yeah. It could be quite interesting times. But I think probably for me that the biggest challenge in this whole thing has been probably the apps, you know, because there's a large number of them. And what we're trying to do this year is we're trying to give more customized app lists to individual classes. So the complaint for the last 3 years, because we really had two sets of apps, one for all of primary and one for all of secondary, the complaint was always that there was hundreds of apps on these iPads that we never used because everybody got the apps regardless of what class they were doing. And what we're trying to do this year is really sort of personalize that a bit more so that people only really get more or less the apps that they need plus a core set that we think everybody needs. And I think that's a bit more work for me. It's certainly a bit more work to keep it straight in my head, what we're doing, especially the further up the school you go. So to give you an example of that, to make it more concrete, what I mean by that is if I'm teaching higher computing, right, I need apps like Textastic and Prompt, and I need it only for the people who are taking my higher computing class. Now, I can do that in Casper. I can say only, I can either put the iPads into a group that's the higher computing group, or I can say these individual people get this app. But the question is, who's in that class? So I have to kind of encode that information into Casper as well so that the right people get the right apps. But it's, you know, that's the challenge. And I think I'm learning more as I go along how to do that. And I think even already I've gotten faster at, you know, buying apps and bringing them into Apple Configurator and stuff like that. And I think the next sort of stage of learning for me is to get faster at Casper and try and figure out what are the shortcuts through that interface to make it work much faster for me. I kind of feel like right now I'm doing it on a very sort of pedestrian level. I'm not doing it in a sophisticated way at all. I'm just saying, all right, this list of iPads, get that app. But how can we sort of finesse that a bit more and use other parts of Casper to make that work? The other thing I'm doing, I was just going to say, Bradley, is in terms of inventory, I used to keep big spreadsheets of device serial numbers and MAC addresses and all that kind of stuff. And I think what I'm going to do this year is, in fact, I'm just going to put all of that into Casper and make Casper be my master database of all that information. Because for every device record in Casper, you can say who owns that device and put in a name and an email address and so on. And I think instead of having another database where I've got, you know, serial number and owner, I'm just going to use Casper and say, here's all my devices, who owns that device? And we'll see how that goes as well. That might not be the ideal solution. But Casper's pretty cool in the sense that it can let you... you can do a search for devices and you can choose the columns that you want in that search result. And then instead of seeing it as a web page, you can just choose to download that all as CSV. So if I ever need to kind of go back to having a spreadsheet as opposed to using the Casper database, I can just do a search and download it all over as a CSV and then drop it into numbers. But I hope I'll not have to do that.
You and your spreadsheets. You are a
love some spreadsheets. Yeah.
Well, there's no point in, if Casper can do it all, there's no really no point in duplicating, you know, the inventory.
Because
two things.
You just end up with them being inconsistent.
Well, because you're going to end up, you know, you're going to get one replaced, and then you're going to get busy, and you're going to forget to put it back in into your number spreadsheet. But you're definitely going to enroll it back in your MDM, and so, yeah, it. it's one of those things we all, you know, you think, oh, we gotta have asset tags on every one of these things. We've got to have a detailed inventory system with check in, check out. And sometimes you just need to go the simple route. And really, a pro tip, those like asset tags that a lot of public schools use, those really hurt your resale value if you attach those that are kind of permanently attached.
Yeah. And because of our lease structure this year, we have to hand back iPads in pretty good condition. So I don't think we're actually even allowed to put any kind of permanent glue things onto the body of the device, which is why we're putting the barcode on the case rather than on the device itself. But that also feeds into the idea that we're not letting people bring their own case either. So it's going to basically be in that case until the case falls apart or the device has to get replaced or 3 years is up. So hopefully those will stick around, pun intended.
The whole app purchasing thing is slow, and really it's simple on what I'd like. You'd like to be able just to, I don't know, like have a cart and just say like, I want to add 50 copies of Tap Typing. I want to add 10 copies of Textastic and Coda and 5 copies of this app and 8 copies of that app, and just say add to cart and then purchase them all at once. And maybe even if you still had individual spreadsheets, which you would want, but at least like kind of bulk buy them.
Yeah, it's kind of weird to use a web store that has no cart system. I haven't seen that in a very long time, but I guess there's a little bit of kind of implementation showing through, because if you think about it, on the App Store on your device, you don't have a cart. You just hit buy and download and buy and download and buy and download. And on an iOS device, when you buy apps, each one's an individual transaction, and I guess that's the way the VPP store works as well, but... it is what it is. A bigger problem, actually, Bradley, I'm not sure if you've run into this, but I've run into it a couple of times, was basically buying the wrong app. So teachers said, I want this app called, Hundreds, Tens, and Units, let's say. And then there's 4 apps in the store called Hundreds, Tens, and Units. And you're back to, which one did you mean? So what I did eventually, sort of before the start of term, was I made all my teachers give me iTunes URLs. So, and there's now a kind of web form you can fill in to request an app, and you cannot submit that form until it has an iTunes URL in it, because that's the only thing that really guarantees that you're talking about the same app as if you share the URLs around. Just naming the app is not enough.
Oh, I ran into that. And one issue I ran into was the paid or free. Mm-hmm. And the teacher didn't say, like, I need the paid one or the free one. So I said, which one did you want? When I was assuming she wanted the paid one. She said, no, I've used both of them, and the free version actually works out better for us for, I don't remember the reason. But it was, just one of those things, always good to find out more information. The URL would have solved that, obviously. But no, that's, because you just think like, well, let's just, give me the game that, or the app that helps you tell time. The Tell Time app. Well, which one is that?
There's like 50 of them. Yeah. Yeah. So it's... what can you do when there's a million apps out there? It's tricky. But the URL is the only canonical thing so far. So yeah, that's been my week. I'm actually done basically now. I mean, I've got a bit of Casper work left to do, but I don't have any more touching iPads to do. They're all basically ready to go. Except for that one that needs to be replaced. And it's now just a case of setting those groups up in Casper, getting those apps in the right place, getting the VPP codes uploaded to Casper, and then it's ready for opening day, which is a week on Monday.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I mean, these kids have, lived probably beyond the useful life of an iPad 1, and they're going to get a shock when they see how fast these new ones are.
and the Retina.
Yeah, that's another issue as well. That's going to be good. And also cameras. I mean, this is the first time we've had cameras on our devices in school. It's really cool.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if you have any behavioral issues revolving around those cameras.
Oh, we will have. You always get a short-term spike in behavior issues when you get something new. But then
that's true.
The trick is to detect it, deal with it, settle it down, get on with your life. It's not the end of the world. Usually. No, it never is. I mean, there's a lot of paranoia around cameras in schools, and sometimes rightly so, but You know, like I keep saying whenever people ask me this question after a presentation, look, you've already got cameras in your classroom. They're called mobile phones, you know. And if you're faced with people who are going to break the rules and take a picture of you on their school iPad, they're probably already breaking the rules and taking a picture of you on their personal phone, which is much less likely to be detected. That's another reason for buying the big iPad, is if somebody's taking a picture with that, they can pretty much tell. As all the video at the Olympics showed, when people were taking pictures with their iPad at the Olympics, which was kind of embarrassing. So, that is my story for this week. I will fill you in next week on how the Casper stuff goes, and I'll try and do a little testing on Casper Focus as well. But yeah, it's been a good week. It's been faster than I thought. I was sure it would take us all the way to Friday just to get to the point that we're at now. And I guess the next big hurdle to get over is opening day, which is it's going to be a busy couple of days for me because there's going to be a fair amount of training for a lot of kids. New kids coming to the school, but also kids who've had iPads, they haven't had iPads deployed this way before. So they're going to have a lot of freedom, and there's going to be a few discussions about what they shall and shall not do with their iPads. But I'm looking forward to it, and I think that we're going to see a real increase in flexibility and capability for these kids, certainly with the kids who've got their own Apple ID as well, which is, we're looking forward to that.
It'll be like the rules of Mr. Spears.
Yes, indeed. It's obviously, the film Full Metal Jacket with the drill sergeant, you know, I always feel like the first 2 days of school and just like Sergeant Hartman all over again, you know. It's like, this is your iPad, there are many like it, but this one is yours.
It's funny, I'm called Mr. Radley, and I don't know when I would become Mr. Chambers. But hey, you know, maybe one day I'll be Mr. Chambers. I think you have to wear a tie to be called Mr. by your last name, and I don't wear a tie.
Oh, yeah, I maybe wear a tie for the first day. I remember picking up a tip from a university lecturer one time. He came to the first lecture of the year in a three-piece suit, and everybody was very intimidated by that, and then he came in a sweater for the rest of the year, but everybody still thought he was a very scary person.
Yeah, I would wear jeans every day if I could. I'm just more comfortable in jeans. You know, wearing dress pants every day gets old.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do?
Nothing. Okay, so let's wrap it up there, Bradley. We'll talk again next week.
Well, good luck on the rest of your deployment. If you don't follow Fraser on Twitter, you can see pictures as he works along, and it's kind of neat seeing that massive device kind of all together. You know, it's like a bunch of iPads sitting there. It's a thief's dream, I guess.
Shh, nobody knows where the school is.
Does it exist?
This has actually been my most nervous point of the year, actually, for that, because this is the only time of the year where all of them are in school at the moment. You know, the rest of the year, at least half of them are gone every night to homes around the place, but this is the risky bit.
Yeah, if you can do it without showing, you know, personal information, it'd be neat to see some of your screenshots maybe on your blog of the Casper deployment or something. If you have a chance, just seeing how things are organized, because it's always fun to see that stuff visualized. You know, when you've been listening about it,
I will see what I can do.
So I guess that's it for this week. Episode 49 is in the can. It's our 1 year anniversary. Thanks to everybody that's been listening for the past year. We appreciate it. Hopefully we'll have a lot more shows to come. We got a fun show next week. Do we announce what it's about now, or do we wait?
Let's save the surprise.
All right. It is something that we have never talked about. And so thanks to our sponsors this week, Jamp Software, makers of the great Apple technologies to help education organizations manage all their Macs and iPads and iPod Touches and iPhones. Learn more at jampsoftware.com, jamfsoftware.com, and Silent Light for iOS, your silent ally in the classroom. Both of those apps and services will be linked on the show notes at outofschool.net or in your favorite podcasting device. So have a great week, everybody.
Good night.